Hello, and welcome to Lunch with Leon. This is Leon Daniels on my regular podcast, where I hope to bring you some interesting people and some interesting stories from around the world. This is an even more special episode than usual, because today I'm introducing Matthew Eisenegger. And Matthew is going to be sitting in this seat and hosting his own podcast show for itthub.net. We're going to be talking to Matthew about his plans for the show and also who he's expecting to have on board. Matthew is from the commercial vehicle sector, and his parallel podcast to mine will be available on itthub.net. So, Matthew, welcome to Lunch with Leon, but soon you're going to have your own show. What's it going to be called?
Oh, this is going to be called CV Focus.
Oh, that's pretty good. At least we know what it is.
Yeah, and we start, we've got our first interview lined up next week, and then hopefully we'll be rolling them through sort of alternate weeks going forward. So, yes, yeah, exciting times. I'm looking forward to it. Got some great people lined up as well.
No, well, I'm really looking forward to it too, because I'm looking forward to hearing it. And have you any idea who your first guest is going to be?
Yes, we have. It's been confirmed today. Steve Bridge from Mercedes-Benz. He's head of the van business for Mercedes in the UK. And an interesting character. He knows the business inside out. He's got his own opinions about the business in general as well. But what I want to try to talk to Steve about is how, from a manufacturer perspective, they've had to deal with, I mean, obviously the ongoing situation with COVID-19, but how a business supports another business, in particular things like, you know, online shopping and home shopping, of which Mercedes-Benz are a large player in that business as a vehicle supplier.
You're right. I mean, these guys have had a good run. I mean, most businesses during the virus have had a terrible downturn, but anybody involved in last mile deliveries has had some good business, right?
Oh, absolutely. I think we've just changed our buying habits so much. I mean, you know, so online shopping has always been something. I suppose I can speak like any household in Britain. It's all something we've all always done, but it's always been such a more of a luxury rather than a necessity. And over the last sort of, you know, 3 months, it's become a necessity to what we do. And guess what? We actually quite like it.
Isn't that funny? So speaking as somebody who hates shopping, I reckon online is just amazing. Mr. Amazon is here every day. And I think that lots of people have changed their minds about this. As you said, online shopping was a niche market for some people, but now people are having their groceries delivered, their household utilities delivered, things like that. And for the last mile delivery people, they must be having a great piece of business.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, again, it's just because our habits have changed, again, through necessity. Same here, you know, we see, you know, Amazon, other home delivery businesses are available. But yeah, it's a complete, it's a revolution in how we live. And, you know, the process is so simple as well. You know, you can buy a shirt, you buy one bigger, one smaller, buy the three and send them back. You know, and the way that the collection works now, it's just so easy to do.
Yeah, and I'm going to talk to you about that, because people do that, don't they? I mean, some people do that in retail anyway. They buy three sizes and take two back. Now it's easier, isn't it? They're online, they do three sizes and four colours and send it back. So I'm just going to ask you some questions about that, because as somebody who very rarely sends anything back, because I've done my research, I'm paying for that, aren't they? Because, I mean, I heard 30% of online goods are returned. So somebody's paying for that. Must be me, right?
Well, I think you're right. There's got to be a built-in cost in there somewhere. I think the more streamlined the actual operators make it, the cheaper it costs them, or cheaper it costs us. But I am very much of the opinion that transport's too cheap anyway. You know, if you look at the demands we put on it, you know, as the online, even pre-COVID, you know, the demands that we put on delivery networks, and even going one step further back, even on the supermarket, you know, we want it there. We want it there now. We want it available now. And, you know, the whole sort of logistics supply chain to that is incredible. But going back to your question, yeah, there's got to be a cost factored in there somewhere along the line. But, and as you say, if you're returning, you know, 30% of the goods that we buy, there's a cost. And I keep going on about it. I think transport's too cheap anyway.
So somebody sent me a photograph, and it's just an anonymous guy looking out the window from behind a curtain. That's all it is, just a guy looking out the window from a curtain. And the caption is,
this is my husband immediately after he ordered something on Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
So we all got to this, haven't we? We now expect this stuff to be delivered instantaneously. It's going to be almost before we've booked it. I think it's amazing.
Don't you think it's testimony to the logistics industry anyway that they can offer that level of service?
Yeah, it's extraordinary. I mean,
just park the cost element of it to one side at the minute, and going back to what we were saying earlier, a lot of the online shopping is through necessity now rather than, what we used to, prior to that. But it's absolutely incredible. You can press a few keys on your keyboard, and within hours, in many instances, the things are on your doorstep. It's absolutely incredible.
It is remarkable. And my friends at the Institute of Couriers say that during COVID, their business was up 200%, and they don't expect it to come. They don't expect it to come down. Is that what you're hearing?
I would do. I was talking to a guy. He works for the Royal Mail. And it's probably a slightly different business model they operate. And I'm not too familiar with how you can make comparison between the Royal Mail and Amazon. But they were saying they were experiencing Christmas Day or the lead up to Christmas, every day for week in, week out, where they'd have that 2 or 3 week burst. This was like 2 or 3 months.
Isn't it interesting? 20 years ago, our mail service was in terminal decline, wasn't it? The biggest time ever was Christmas, people sending Christmas cards, and that was in decline. People were writing fewer letters because they were speaking on the phone. And now our mail services are super rejuvenated. Not just the Royal Mail, but all of these companies. I can remember I was on an assignment in the US, and we got the chance to see the head of the US Postal Services in California. So here's me being an idiot. Our biggest problem is e-commerce. And of course, I thought he said email. And I just assumed that email meant people were sending fewer letters. And I said, I said to him, yeah, this must have really harmed your business. And he lit up and he said, harmed it? What do you mean harmed it? Who the hell do you think delivers all this stuff? Which is the first time I realized, and that's 20 years ago now, the first time I realized that that's what's coming down the line now. Which is exciting. So look, Matthew, in anticipation of you and I sharing the hot seat here at itthub.net, can you tell our listeners a bit about you and your background?
How long have you got?
I think we've got 20 minutes.
Yeah, well, Robert, I better give you a sort of a quick version of it. I'm 51 years old. I started my career in, I've worked in the commercial vehicle industry all my life in varying positions. I started as a technician. Came off the spanners. I used to work at Wallace Arnold Sales and Services in Leeds, which was a Bedford and Vauxhall truck dealer, which was a spin-off of Wallace Arnold Coaches and Bar Wallace Arnold Trust. Got to the tender age of 21 and felt I wanted to sell trucks. So I went into truck sales September 1989. Sold trucks for a few brands up until the late 90s. Sold AWDs. First, if anybody remembers those, they were the carry-on from Bedford Trucks, and then sold Renault trucks up until early 2000. Changes in my life circumstances. I'd always been quite interested in the sort of marketing side of the business. I did a short tenure with a specialist engineering company. But I'd always had a sort of a yearning to get involved more with the sort of marketing analytics. And there was, the industry fascinated me, not just the truck element, but how the whole industry worked. And then I got an opportunity to join a company to do that, be involved with quite high level marketing reports and global analytics, statistics and data, and all these other things, which were absolutely fascinating. And then the company decided they wanted to get involved in media and launched a couple of media products that I sort of had a hand in, and I'm not saying ran, but was sort of, I'd like to think, sort of reasonably key to what they did. Global downturn, 2009, everybody remembers it. And I had a decision to make. Did I want to continue doing what I was doing for who I was doing it for? There was no animosity, but I just thought, you know what? I had a really, really good idea about what I felt a really good idea about launching a free magazine for truck drivers. But, very much in a full format magazine rather than sort of a newspaper style thing. So making it like a paid for magazine. but giving it away at truck stops and motorway service areas and lorry washes and all those things. So I had a choice to make. Do I just settle my idea, or do I take the plunge? And much to everybody's surprise, and being accused of being mad, particularly in that current economic climate, late 2010, and formed the business. And then on the January 2011, launched CV Driver magazine, which was the first magazine that we did. And then continued that very, very quickly with another free pickup title, basically for the professional trades, for the van market, called Trade Van Driver magazine. And then we built the media business from there. So we've got a number of other titles we work on. One being DAF Driver magazine, which we work with very closely with the marketing team and DAF. And DAF as a brand, you know, I own the product, but it's very much with their blessing and consent. And we do another magazine for Fours, which again, similar arrangement. You know, they get ultimate sign off on what we do. So we're covering very much the driver market from one end of the perspective, and then from the other end, very much the high end, conformity, safety, environmentally focused operator at the other.
Look, that's amazing, because we already have subscribed onto Lunch with Leon people from the highway sector, people from politics, people from the institutions, as well as the operators. So I know that this audience is going to be really pleased to know that not only what I do on the passenger side, which is my speciality, as part of doing this inside ITTHub.net, we're going to have you doing this on the freight and logistics side as well. So I'm looking forward to that. I've always thought about this, and you and I, we've talked about this before. Passenger and freight has never really spoken to each other, even though we buy our vehicles from the same manufacturers worldwide. We're looked after by the Department for Transport. We're licensed by the same traffic commissioners. Yet actually, passenger and freight have never really had anything to do with each other. And the only time that changed a bit in my time at TFL is that although we had no direct powers, we had to get close to the freight and logistics people for the London 2012 Olympics.
Yeah.
In order to deliver free running streets for the Olympic Games, we had to have an arrangement with freight and logistics. And that arrangement with freight logistics involved retiming and changing deliveries. So in the case of some goods like photocopier paper, we just wanted you in June to order twice as much, so you didn't need delivery in July. On perishable foods, we had to come to a different arrangement. And as my old boss, Sir Peter Hendy, who was commissioner, would say, nobody will come to London if the pubs have no beer and there's no bread in the pubs. So we had to learn about freight and logistics. And we also got into safety. And one of the greatest things that TFL did in that period was we really got into safety. We found we had way too many construction vehicles built for construction sites that were not really suitable to be used on roads. And we had many, many, as you remember, high profile cases of cyclists being injured in accidents. So have you seen a big improvement in the safety culture and freight logistics from the drivers of the vehicles?
Yeah, but we're on the cusp of it. You're absolutely right what you're saying. I mean, I can't speak for Fours. I mean, obviously we work very, very closely with them, but if you look at, you know, London as a city, but then if you look away from London, what's going on in other inner city areas, you know, the fact that, you know, they want to make life easier and safer for vulnerable road users is amazing. But I think where we are, and this is quite interesting, particularly with the advent of COVID-19 and the announcement that Grant Shapps made probably a month, 6 weeks ago now, that at that point, public transport probably wasn't, and I think he didn't say London, I don't believe, but he might as well have done, that public transport wasn't in a place to be able to accommodate the amount of people that needed to use it. And we'd make good strides forward, good developments in our own personal health, walking a lot further, using cycles, and very, very keen to encourage that. So from my perspective, I think going forward, there's going to be more and more vulnerable road users out. There's going to be more people walking, more people cycling, and enjoying it. And again, as an industry, as a business, we've got to take some of that responsibility and just be mindful that there are more and more people out there, probably more so than there has been in recent years, and it's not going to go away. So investment in safety, in vehicles, as well as the environmental improvements that we've got with improved air quality, got to keep going. We've started now. We've got to keep moving.
Yeah, it's exciting, isn't it? And it's interesting also, isn't it, how much more aware people are. For a long time, people thought the buses just came out of nowhere, and they thought that the trucks just came out of nowhere. It feels to me now people are more involved, aren't they? They know that there is a complicated supply chain for them getting their goods, and somewhere, somehow, that stuff is traveling on the roads, and there's humans, things are being delivered, things are being loaded, things are being organized, and things are being unloaded. So it feels to me that people know, are a bit more aware now about what freight and logistics is about. It doesn't stop them having very, very high expectations, but they are aware, aren't they?
Absolutely. And I think one of the things, again, I keep going, talking about this pandemic, but unfortunately we're going to have to just talk about it because that's where we are at the minute. I think there's become a massive, over the last 3 months, a mass appreciation for exactly what road transport is about, what drivers go through, and understanding a little bit more a lot of things. We all do it. We walk down the high street, we walk into the supermarket, we take things for granted. We've never had to do without before. It's like wartime, and people have realised and have put a proper value on what logistics is.
That's interesting. And what do you think for the future of that industry, the whole freight and logistics industry? What's coming?
I've been, as I say, involved in the sort of media for the last sort of 15 years. And I'd always been a keen follower of the industry, having worked in it. And trucks hadn't changed much in design in the previous 100 and odd years. And where we're at now with alternative, you know, and the one thing we've got to remember is this alternative technology has always been about, but it's either been not cost effective to make the leap to it, or has not been developed enough to support us as a transport operator. It's moving at a real rate of knots now. So not only we talk about electric vehicles, we talk about hydrogen fuel cell vehicles, all which were, you know, particular hydrogen 10 years ago was a pipe dream. You know, I mean, I was lucky enough to go on a hydrogen fuel cell bus in Hamburg about 12 years ago and couldn't believe it. But it was, you know, when you heard the vehicles were millions and millions of euros, now the technology is becoming affordable, and we can see it. We've got also there's still a lot of life left in traditional diesel engines. And although getting cleaner, we can look at different types of fuel to burn in that. One of the things I want to be talking further on with my podcast in CV Focus. But we've got autonomous driving coming. There's a million and one things happening here and now that really are going to be game changers for the logistics industry, and will ultimately drive safety, ultimately drive efficiency and productivity. It's amazing. Fantastic times to be involved.
It is, isn't it? And so I had Isbrand Ho from BYD, the Chinese electric vehicle manufacturer, on the show last week. And he's absolutely certain that electric's got a big future because it's available now. We already have several hundred electric buses. The battery technology is just coming at us at some amazing speed of battery density and so on. And I'm looking forward. I've got a recording coming up with Joe Bamford, who runs Rise Hydrogen and is also the owner of Wrightbus in Ballymena. And he's on hydrogen. And his view, of course, is that hydrogen is the future because hydrogen gives you the range. So hydrogen will be much more useful, won't it, for long-distance services, switches, trucks, and so on. But my only concern about hydrogen, and I'm going to put this to Joe when I talk to him later this week, is that it seems to me, you were talking about being in Hamburg, hydrogen was always going to be ready tomorrow, but it's been ready tomorrow for 20 years. So do you think it really is tomorrow?
Well, I went to a presentation in Turin with the announcement of the joint venture that Iveco have got with Nikola, or Nicola, however we say it, the American company. Specializing in hydrogen fuel cell vehicles. And yeah, they gave us some very, very in-depth presentations about how they want to tackle the sort of, one, the global market, but two, more prevalent for the discussion about the European market. And a lot of things I didn't realize about hydrogen, you can't transport it, so it's got to be manufactured at the point of distribution, realistically. So there's a lot of infrastructure hurdles need to be crossed. Yeah, but it does seem like they do have a plan for it.
The hydrogen I had in London came by truck from Rotterdam. So that was transported. Mm-hmm. But it rather defeats the whole point, doesn't it, if the hydrogen comes on a truck.
Yeah.
Better to have it at the point of use, right?
Well, that's as I understand it. As I said, again, the explanation was very, very sort of very, very scientific, and it was like a big chemistry set. And they did try to give us some very sort of basic knowledge with it, but they were very much of the opinion that, you know, for the purpose, and I hope I'm not misquoting them, but for the purpose of certainly their early ventures into an infrastructure, they would be supporting the main sort of highway networks across Europe with almost power stations, if you want to call it that, providing hydrogen to support those routes, and then as time went on, gradually expanding the web.
And on autonomous vehicles, I'm hoping to get Christian Wolmar on the show. He's already written a book about how autonomous vehicles will never happen. But my view, I think, is that autonomous vehicles isn't like going decimal in 1971. Like yesterday, it's one thing and tomorrow it's another. Autonomous vehicles are progressive. So vehicles increasingly have dynamic cruise control, lane keeping assist, automatic parking. So we're gradually making our way through that, aren't we, in terms of autonomy? What I'm excited about is the platooning of trucks. And that really is possible, isn't it? There'll be a driver in the front one, and all the other ones will follow.
Yeah, they are. I mean, the one thing to remember, and I think this has been sort of probably not misreported, but misunderstood. When we talk about driverless trucks, we're not talking about driverless trucks. We're talking about autonomous vehicles, each vehicle in the platoon with a driver. I've been party to the demonstration. I've been involved in it. And realistically, if you're in any of those vehicles away from the first vehicle and you're traveling extremely close, it is a little bit, you know, it does take a little bit of getting used to, but it's so instant is the technology. As soon as things start to slow and speed up, it's amazing, fantastic technology, but it is a combination of all the technology brought into one. But now this is my but. I think not necessarily a time and a place for it, but there's certainly a location for it. If you're running in, let's say, Spain, for example, where you've got hundreds and hundreds of miles of roads, great infrastructure of roads across Spain, where there's not many vehicles on there, you would probably get a real, real benefit of that technology, where you're getting vehicles close up there, you're getting savings on fuel, which is brilliant. Personally, I think to try and get maximum benefit from that technology in the UK on the motorway networks that we've got, I think would be a big ask. I really do, because, you know, the motorways are busy. I mean, they're not so busy at the minute, but when we get more cars back on the roads, and there's a real, real density of traffic, to try and get the benefit, I think, I'm not saying it's questionable, but I don't think they get the benefit that would be expected. I mean, if you look at, you know, running down from the southwest of England up to, let's say, to Carlisle, I mean, I don't know how many, 250 miles of maybe a bit more of usable motorway, where you compare it to some other European routes where there's less vehicles on the road and you can get really, really dial the vehicles in close. We're an island nation, and we unfortunately do operate in many instances in a different way, really.
So Matthew, tell me, did I get this right? One of the lessons with the platooning of trucks in autonomous mode is that if the trucks are too far apart, stupid motorists try and get in between them. But alternatively, yep, if you have them too close, there's not enough airflow through the radiators of the trucks to keep the engines cool.
That's exactly it. I mean, I won't name the manufacturer. It's not fair for me to do that. But I've been and witnessed tests where we're talking 30 and 40 centimetres apart. They really are that close to each other. But again, exactly that. You've got to get the distance right. And the platoon in general does get the fuel saving, but you've got to get the distance right. Because the one thing, again, and I think this is probably for the industry, not for the for road traffic users in general, they've got to understand what's going on. Because if you see five or six vehicles in very, very close succession. As a car driver, also a car driver, van driver, other road user, you've got to decide how you negotiate this obstacle that could be, you know, hundreds of meters long. Sure. And how you match your speed to get off at the next junction. And we know we've all done it. We leave it to the last minute and try cut across. And if there's a gap there, we'll try to take it. So absolutely, yeah, the distance is critical. One, for the efficiency, but two, for everybody's overall safety as well.
So Matthew, look, I am really looking forward to hearing your podcast, because these are all things I know that you'll have guests on the show who want to talk about. So it's going to be really interesting for all of our listeners. One final thing from me. You and I, coming towards the upper end of our careers in transport, I just wonder what you might say to the young people, the university graduates and other young people who are thinking about joining this sector, but are just wondering whether it's the right thing to do. Bearing in mind there's technology and computers and all that stuff. What's your advice to the young people for transport?
If you want to really get hold of technology, then the road transport, without a shadow of a doubt, is a way to do it. And that could be either from a technician on a local dealership workshop floor, dealing with the latest diesel engines, the most complicated things. We've got electric vehicles coming through as well. We can go to the other side. We can look at traffic management and planning, all very, very much IT based. We've got warehousing and distribution, exactly the same. You know, you only have to look at, I'll use Amazon because we've spoken about Amazon, but look at some of Amazon's distribution centers. They are the state of the art. So in relationship to, if you want technology at any level, really road transport is where you're going to find it.
Well, there's a great message to the young people for the future. So Matthew Asnega, I'm really looking forward to the new podcast on itthub.net called CV Focus. You'll be able to link up with Matthew from the website, also broadcast on Apple and Spotify and all the other ways that you get podcasts. I'm really looking forward to this. This is the next segment of itthub.net, focusing on freight and logistics. Thank you very much indeed for being my guest. I'm looking forward to your first show, which I know we're going to hear very soon. And thank you very much indeed for being my guest today. This has been Lunch with Leon. Thank you very much, as I say, for being with us. This is a production from itthub.net. Please go to the website, leave your comments, let us know other people you'd like us to talk to, other things you'd like to know about. My plan is to try and bring interesting people and interesting stories from around the world. We've really had that today. I'm looking forward to the new podcast and look forward to welcoming you back here next time.